Planning Commission work session. First order of business is roll call. Jim Patrick, here. Bill Brannigan?
Here.
Bob Berman?
Here.
Jim Heffelman?
Here.
Gary East?
Here.
Braulio Escobar?
Here.
John Updike?
Here.
Dustin Capri?
Present.
Greg Sutton? Okay. And Annie McGriney?
Present.
All right. First up is new business, a discussion of tubs and sanitary regarding trash enclosure standards for multifamily and commercial development projects. Eric?
Yeah, Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. I have a single slide that kind of summarizes what was in the packet. Before I put this on the screen, though, I thought it might be helpful if Rob and Amy Thompson are willing to speak to this, just to provide a little context from their perspective as to what is needed and why.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. Well, thank you for having us tonight. I'm Rob Thompson. This is my wife, Amy Thompson, of Thompson Sanitary Service. Derek, that was a pretty open-ended introduction. I think I will just make a simple statement that we've experienced over the years challenges with collection of garbage and recycling at both existing and new developments. We would support working with the planning department on a standardization of those recommendations to new development, especially, or remodels. And it would be helpful not only for, I think, the citizen trying to develop their property, but it would be helpful for us as well. So we're open to that. And I did submit a 10-page example. I don't think we need to get to that level of detail necessarily, nor do I think it's really needed. I think I'll stop there and just be part of the discussion.
So what drives your discussion here to make some changes? Are there some problems that you're trying to correct? Are you trying to make, you know, the collection of refuse easier for you and the customers?
Do I need to press the button down? No. Okay, thank you. That's an excellent question. So recently we've had a code violation in the form of a nuisance at Surfview. It's a new development. Derek, I don't recall what style of construction it was, but it falls under a certain portion of planning. Mm-hmm. And the developer chose to use a compactor, which is fine by us, but if not properly managed and staffed on site, it creates a nuisance. And it's a public health and safety issue at that point. And so we provide a variety of different services. The compactor piece, the most obvious and simple one, but if the property doesn't provide ongoing maintenance staff for the residents, then it becomes an unsanitary situation and mm-hmm. code enforcement officers then are called out. We're not in the enforcement piece of this. We do provide the services, but it's voluntary. It's not a mandatory situation. So we're willing and able to pick up bulky items. We're willing to police trash around enclosures and things of that nature, but those are additional fees beyond just the standard base service of hauling that compactor tube, emptying it out, rinsing it, and then returning it to its stall.
And honestly, since they opened, we get constant calls about trying to fix the situation. So, if for the weekend, the compactor is non-operable because there's nobody on staff to operate it. So the trash piles up. And then they have another enclosure that only has recycling bins. So ideally, you'd have garbage and recycling in both enclosures. And they only have one that has garbage, and it's really far away from some of the complex, some of the apartments. So they just take it to the closest one and drop it off and throw it in recycling. Then we end up seeing a pile of stuff in the recycling enclosure. We're having to clean it up. Then tenants are calling us because they think we're not maybe properly servicing containers where they just didn't have good planning. They really actually should have more than two enclosures for that size of a complex, and they only have two. It's very intuitive that when you walk to throw something away, you have a choice between garbage and recycling. You have to have those side by side. Otherwise, people are just going to dump whatever container is available. So it's a very frequent problem that our staff deals with a lot. So that's the main reason, yeah.
I can see the conflict of trying to enforce, I mean, you're there to gather and clean and take it away rather than picking up the mess that people lay on the ground.
Yeah, and then we have to assess fines because their recycling is completely contaminated and we have to haul it away as trash. So, and then that goes to...
Jared?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just have a question for Derek.
Yes.
Couple of questions. First of all, do we have any standards in place now?
No, not really. We don't really have any standards in place for trash enclosures.
Okay. And if we did implement something, it would not apply to Surfview. Is that true?
Correct, because that's a completed development.
Okay, so there's really two problems. It's looking forward to avoid it in the future, and then figuring out something to do about Surfview.
Right, and I think what you're hearing here is we're not necessarily going to avoid all issues moving forward. Some of what's going on at Surfview is operational in how they're managing the property, which we can't resolve with standards. However, we could put in place some standards that go further and will help ensure there's, say, enough trash enclosures there. That doesn't mean the trash enclosures will be properly managed moving forward, but it could ensure that there's more trash enclosures there at the beginning of a development.
Jim, go ahead.
I suppose this would be best addressed to Derek, although mm-hmm. you folks from Thompson's are welcome to jump in. Does the contract between Thompson and the city require you to service that development? Can you back away and say, we're not going to deal with you anymore? I mean, can't we send them to the corner? Derek?
Do you want to start there?
Yeah, I think we want to move off of Surfview here shortly.
Yeah.
And kind of in the broader context, because that's one operator. And I'll be candid with our code enforcement folks, that's not the only one where we have complaints.
Yeah.
So there are others in terms of how trash is being managed at principally multifamily and some commercial establishments. With respect to Surfview Village, that's one that is a... I believe that Surfview is contractually obligated to have service and maintain that in a certain level with Oregon Housing Community Services because it's an affordable housing project that was funded about 85% with public money. They have some obligations that are probably a little bit different than, say, your market rate multifamily. I do believe that under our franchise agreement and solid waste code that we have in place, that Thompson's has the ability to say, hey, look, you either make some changes or we're not going to be able to continue to provide you with meaningful service. We haven't gone down that. They don't want to go down that road. We haven't gone down that road.
Right.
But I do believe there's authority to go down that road if it were necessary with some operator. I think what we're trying to do for this discussion is identify. Are there some standards that make sense to apply to new development? That's what's before the Planning Commission. What happens after development in terms of the behavior of the operator of the commercial or multifamily is a little bit different issue, which we also can deal with as a city through our nuisance code. So there are different tools out there. But here, what we're looking at is what standards, if any, make sense for us to put in the code. Correct.
Okay, I got two questions on that. First question is, besides Surfview, what other things you're having problems with? I'm assuming you have problems picking up trash at certain places because you can't get the trucks in, or?
So that's a good question. I would back up as well just for a minute and answer Jim's question and make sure that it's clear. So our franchise provides us rates and service levels that are approved and reviewed by the City Council on an annual basis. It's the same arrangement for the county commissioners. And we're not allowed to provide preferential rates or services outside of those confines. And the last thing we want to do is go down a road of not providing service as the mechanism to try to get compliance. It'd be much more beneficial for us and the customer as well as the city to have a standardization on the front end. So that's what we're trying to respond to and address with Derek. And Derek's been great in the planning department as well as the city manager on this topic. So I think there's opportunity here to do some work to some degree, and maybe not get too far into the weeds about requirements or mandatory service or anything like that. Okay, so we do have other challenges. I would say the primary challenge is a substandard street or lack of maintenance with brush and some of things like that, where there's visual, obscurity or just lack of size for the trucks that we utilize, things like that. So, and if that doesn't answer your question, hit me again. I'm not sure I know exactly what you're getting at.
Well, I mean, I would look at the standards and whatnot, but I do know, because I have my own apartments, that I can either get service once a week or I can get service twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I have containers that are actually probably big enough I could get by with once a week. I just don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do it twice a week. And I probably oversized my recycling container way farther than it ought to be. But
then you don't have a mess.
Yeah. No, I still have a mess because I'm right next to the parking lot. Okay, and the homeless, and we had to lock them up.
It's
like, sorry to interrupt you.
Everything comes out of the containers. So,
question. Those are other challenges that you hit on.
When we look at our standards, I just want to make sure that we don't hit on a standard that says you got to have this much yardage for an apartment, but it needs to be time based too. So if you can get twice a week.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, when we're building this, I just want to make sure we're covering all the bases.
So on a commercial account, we'll surface it 5 or 6 days a week. We do have some Saturday service in the summertime. We're not opposed to that. You hit on a great point. If the container is not locked inside an enclosure, then we do lid locks. We charge for it all. I mean, because it's an additional service to what the base level would be. And so we're trying not to have a subsidy occur where there isn't a fee for those extra services. When you do that, then it's embedded in the rate and everybody pays for that extra service at one place, whereas you may not have extra service at another. So we try to keep that really transparent. Lid locks are just the cost of that material. And then if we have additional time to service it, unlock it, relock it, all those things, then we charge by the minute. So
lid locks are just to make sure things don't blow away.
Lid locks are so there's not theft of service, because if it's out in the public, then you may have
people filling it.
Yeah. Yes. I was trying to find a delicate way to say that. Yeah. Or you'll have scavenging, right?
Yeah.
And so oftentimes when there's
folks, the one that gets me.
Yeah.
And then they leave a mess.
I don't know a good way to describe that either, but we have a hard time with the public litter cans. We call them automated litter receptacles. And oftentimes we'll see people looking for deposit bottles in there and leaving a mess behind. So those are some of the challenges not addressed at all in what we're here for tonight or what this maybe speaks to, but those are other challenges. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think like with this plan guide that's similar to what's up here too, is just, it's more of a to give people an idea of what they actually even need and what kind of size requirements that might mean for them. Because even we've had like some condo complexes build an enclosure and then the two tubs don't fit in there.
Yeah.
And they don't contact us, and
Well, and that's like a part of the process. I think we've done a couple multifamily houses up and down our projects up and down the coast, and it's been unofficially suggested to us by the either the building department or the planning department that you reach out to the local utility. And so then when we reach out to them, you know, if you get the cart sizes, and then the biggest thing is like topography, which I think is something that you can take from the Seattle example that probably should be built into every single any standard that you adopt, where you're looking at topography and, hey, this is a unique problem. How do you solve this problem? Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, like one is such a steep lot that in the parking lot, this is actually in Toledo at Dulles. Mm-hmm. And they asked us, they said, hey, would it be possible to make it wide enough and the turn radius wide enough into the parking lot so that we could back in? Because they're like, it's not realistic for us to pick up this trash service on a hill that's sloped like this. I mean, I think maybe the topography part of it would be key, I think, is making sure that you're looking at it from like a case-by-case basis. I don't know if the city wants to do that, though.
Well, I think we have to be, well, you know, the last bullet here, Newport's terrain constraints are a consideration. I mean, we have to be thinking about that. A number of the examples that you could look in terms of sample codes, I mean, coming from the valley where it's flat and it's easy enough to be able to put in the access standards that they have and for developers to meet that, you know. I think a few things to keep in mind here. One, we're only talking about multifamily and commercial uses. We're not talking about single family, detached and attached. That's different. When we talk about multifamily, because that's a form of needed housing, we have to have clear and objective standards. We can't do the case-by-case basis if it's a standard. Now, we can always have a discussion with somebody about, hey, we suggest you talk to Thompson's, or we suggest you think about this or this or this. But if it's multifamily and we put it in as a requirement, it's got to be clear and objective. Now, you see some examples of that. I mean, I think Redmond's, you know, quantifies it, 0.3 yards per unit for refuse, 0.2 yards recycling. Seattle, you know, sizing based on a dwelling range. I mean, there are ways to do that if we want to try to put some standards in there that get at how many enclosures you have based on the size or scale of your development. Mm-hmm. And there may be some others that we could weave in there that are pretty straightforward and achievable, I think, on a you know, reasonable basis. Width, you know, in terms of the enclosure, height of an enclosure, its proximity to a building. Those are ones, you know, especially if it's got combustibles. We could even take a look at under what circumstances compactors make sense.
Yeah.
They're
be good.
They're really tough if they're not going to staff them. We all know how expensive labor is and hard to find. So I support that fully, Derek. You're hitting the right point there.
Sure. I'd be cautious with access because of our terrain to try to specify that too tightly, because it may then create major issues for projects because of parcel size and slope and all that.
But you could dictate enclosure requirements. I think a wind too, right? Like, how often are you guys like picking up something that was over here and a big windstorm and suddenly it's 5 feet over?
We may want to specify drainage on the concrete pads. One of the issues we deal with a lot on nuisance is odor.
Yeah.
So it gets clogged.
That'd be, you know, and if you have ponding, you're going to have a greater chance you're going to have problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
Derek?
We could... Besides doing, you know, kind of what was suggested, we could say automated compactors are not acceptable, or we can't go that far.
I wouldn't go there. I think that's one. It's a discussion with Thompson's under what circumstances it makes sense, because it is compactors are a valuable option for folks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. It's efficient.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's the most efficient. I mean, you think about it, it's a single tube picked up theoretically the least often, right? So it's the most efficient for us. But the challenge there becomes is it has to be loaded. And if you're not going to give access to your residents, there has to be someone that does that. And I don't know how to get our hands around that requirement.
It probably makes sense. It's commercial establishments.
Mm-hmm. Works great for...
It makes sense in multifamily establishments.
Why would it? Well, unless they can promise to staff it.
Right.
Yeah, and why would that not be a possible contingency? You want a compactor? Wonderful. We support that. However, it must be personed, manned, womaned, whatever.
Staffed.
Each and every day staffed. Yeah. Thank you, Mr.
How are we going to enforce that?
Well, yeah, we don't enforce a lot here anyway. But at least you have something that you can fall back on and say, you agreed to this when you put the compactor in. Mm-hmm. Now you don't want to follow the rules. And so now maybe we could actually establish some kind of a criteria for people who continually ignore the agreement they made.
I was going to say, the problem development that you're facing right now, has there been any dialogue between the management or the owners and your firm?
Yes. Yeah.
A ton.
A lot. We've tried recycling education and yes. And they just have so much turnover there that it's almost impossible to make sure that everyone's educated all the time. And then you've got kids that are emptying trash and they don't know. And it's just, it's an access. It's how far they have to walk. That's one of the biggest things. And then the compactors on the weekend. So it's two things really, is that I think the people's in the farthest apartments probably have to walk maybe 150 yards.
Yeah, it's a long ways.
I mean, it's and a we long know way.
From human nature, it's yeah, too far.
It's too far.
Little Creek Apartments is a great example. It's 180 units, and they have 7 different corrals around that property.
They do mm-hmm. a wonderful job.
Yeah.
So they are.
Not to get back to surf view,
the standard.
But, they're between 3 and 4, and that would adequately, you know, spread them out across the facility. So it's not rocket science, and it's not going to change really a lot for us. We want the best workable system, obviously, for collection that we can get. If we constantly are going to facilities that are really difficult to serve, our costs are going to be higher, and that's going to be expressed through the rates. So it's not an emergency situation for us, but this opportunity to work with the city presented itself, and we're more than willing to sit down and try to work out something that's sensible. Doesn't have to be 10 pages, and it's certainly going to be at the complete direction of Derek. So we're just here to help and try to find something that works for us as well.
Bob, did you have something?
It seems to me there's a, you know, the standards, that would be pretty easy to come up with. There's lots of little subtleties, but that would be pretty easy to come up with. But they stop applying as soon as the occupancy permit is issued.
Yeah.
As long as you've met the standards, then the occupancy starts. And then there's a whole nother phase of monitoring or enforcement. And I'd like to see maybe something in this code that can address that with some specifics as to how you remedy bad players, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that starts to get into the nuisance code. We're talking about standards that we can be very clear about what the standards need to be for new development. But in terms of how managers of a multifamily project or a commercial property, for that matter, manage that on an ongoing basis, that's a little trickier. And we also have to keep in mind, it's not just the managers, it's tenant behavior, which is a significant piece of that too, you know, where they could be managing it reasonably well, but they're still going to be running into issues because they're evicting people and people behave inappropriately at times when that happens.
Yes, they do.
Also, so there's a Recycling Modernization Act that was passed last year in the state of Oregon, and within the next 5 years, recycling is going to change and how we pick it up and how we're funded to pick it up. And in this, they're planning on probably addressing some of this. So just so this is something that's statewide that a lot of people are working on right now. And they're also addressing a lot of multi-tenant issues. So right before COVID, I was on a multi-tenant task force with DEQ trying to figure out how we get tenants to recycle and put away their garbage correctly, because it's a statewide issue. And there's a lot of different things that we could be doing. So they're hoping to get that started as well. And those will help us with maybe some more guidelines, I guess. We can start with this, but just to know that that's out in the future. There's a lot of task force that are going within the next 5 years. It'll change probably. So,
what about access into the different locations that you have to go to? Is it okay? Can it be improved in the benefit of Thompson and their?
So our collection trucks are side loads, and they're all uniform. That's one thing that we've worked really hard over the years to get to. We don't have rear loads. We don't have front loads. We just have one side load style truck. So from a 35-gallon roll cart to a 300-gallon tub, they're all really, really similar in terms of rolling them out of the enclosure if there is one, or picking them up at the curb. So it's pretty straightforward for us, really, to write some of the code piece that would be on the front end of what we would need. It'd be very standardized. The list that was in the Recology report, there's like 15 different items. We really could break ours down into two with 3 Dropbox styles. The Dropbox is kind of beyond the scope of what we're talking about tonight, although Amy did run across a set of plans that showed a compactor tube in a parking garage, which is just not, there's no way for us to get a hold of that thing and drag it out into the open air.
Yeah.
So no offense to the really smart people that draw these plans, but our trucks are big. Don't put these vessels in little tiny closets, please.
I mean, to that point though, the only thing that the municipal code requires right now is what us to put a label that says trash enclosure, right? It doesn't even require an enclosure, right? Just an area for refuge.
Yeah, we don't. There's very little in the way of parameters right now, you know, in the code. You know, one other, Annie, to your question about access, there's another twist to access, which is access to the user.
Yeah.
And we do need to be sensitive to that. ADA is an issue that we need to make sure those with mobility limitations still have the ability to toss away their trash or take out their recycling.
You had suggested that the 25-page set of rules from Recology might be a little overkill for our community.
Right.
Would you mind editing it down?
Yeah.
You already suggested some modifications.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think as a first run at this, really, for the city of Newport, we don't have to hit the home run to start with. If we did a base hit and got some of these things mm-hmm. in place, that'd be great. It's a lot better than what we have now. So
you seem to have a handle on the multitude of difficulties that are presented for you
mm-hmm.
Already here in Newport. I would think that just taking those issues mm-hmm. and having remedies to those issues would go a long way in giving us exactly what we would need to come up with standards.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it might be pretty direct for you guys to mm-hmm. be able to use the Recology report to as a cheat sheet, if you will.
Right. I always like taking the best ideas.
Why invent the wheel a second and third time?
Absolutely. And you have other issues to hear besides this, so the short list with Derek's leadership would be.
Yeah, we can certainly work with you. I think the purpose of this first meeting was to make sure that you were comfortable with us working on some, that this is a priority you wanted addressed, and we can, you've had a chance to talk about the issue, what some of the options are, and we can, from this, if that's where the general consensus is, work with Thompson's on a short list of standards that we could incorporate into the code that would apply to multifamily and commercial. I would add there's one other area that we might want to tackle that wasn't really addressed on this list, but we are more often running into it, is people looking to put their waste receptacles offsite on the opposite side of a street, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I can think of, that's where Inn at Night Beach is going with it.
We do, and that's a good example. We can talk about that briefly, but the structure that they're proposing is large
mm-hmm.
And close to the street. So mm-hmm. We're really happy with what they're proposing, but we don't have any really compelling language to encourage them in this remodel or the permit that they're pulling to actually do it that way. So we're lucking out in that regard. However, speaking to the safety of them having their refuse away from where their business is located, I don't have any really, I don't have anything to say about that, but it's an issue
we might want to look at. Because especially if you're regularly having to haul trash across the street,
mm-hmm.
Especially a higher traffic street,
It is. It's a right turn, no stop, and it's a busy, mm-hmm. this Ocean View turns into another street.
Well, and then how do you, visually, how do you want it to look? Because it's going to be right next to a busy intersection. Yeah. And I mean, they're probably going to do a nice job because they're a nice hotel.
Right.
But yeah.
Yep. Yep. Just another.
I agree. Yeah. Hard to write something that's going to work perfectly 5 years from now for a customer that.
Sure.
Maybe we haven't even thought of.
Does Dahl's have similar issues? They service parts of Lincoln County too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they do. And I don't know. I can't speak to what their code says or how they address it. Although their trucks are the same as ours in terms of side load, and they use the same tub and cart system that we do. So I'd be happy to ask them what their pain and suffering is, and see if we can learn something from them as well.
Yeah. I know when I reached out to them, they were like shocked. They're like, wait, what? You want to know? And they're like, is the permit issued? I'm like, no, we're just like starting. I just want to make sure it'll work because the city told us to reach out to you and they were shocked.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of times they're probably like you guys where they just get stuck with it.
Absolutely.
One day suddenly someone calls, starts a service, and then you show up and you're like, oh, great. How am I going to figure out this for the duration of this building's existence?
Yeah.
And that's what happened at Surfview. You've got the developer, which is different than the manager. And I think that's also different than the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the developer is doing it as cheap as they can for the owner. And then the management company has been given another deck of cards. And we're just stuck in the middle.
Yeah, and so. I know in this case they weren't very happy. So, but they're stuck with a 5-year lease on a compactor. So.
Well, and we discouraged them from it to begin with, but that's kind of here nor there. Mm-hmm. And then there was some homeless activity that also exacerbated the overall problem.
Right.
But again, just one location. We can do some really good things all around town with some, you know, some guidelines that are. That are known. If everybody knows what the rules are, at least the guidelines are, it's fair. And then we all.
Does the public have any concerns that they brought to you?
Mm-hmm. Lots of tenant concerns. Like since they opened, it really got bad like about 6 months ago. But yes, yeah.
What about overall in the city?
It doesn't happen that often where they contact us. It's only happened with the multi-tenant kind of complexes.
The city?
Yes.
Of course. Yes. It typically ends up with our code enforcement staff that work with the police department. And it's often related to just overloaded trash containers, so it's unsightly, or odor, which is a common one, particularly, say, down on the bayfront, where you've got people who've been crabbing or fishing and kind of thing. So I hear that there's a general consensus here that we work on this and work with Thompson's on this and bring back kind of a short set of standards at a future work session.
Just a quick question.
Thanks.
So if they had, if you set a standard for so many containers per unit, depending on the size.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if those units had either one enclosure per building or two enclosures per building, which would alleviate some of the issues with distance and, you know, trying to keep everything a little bit more contained. How much of an issue is that going to add to your collection? And is that going to take a lot of thought as far as layout and where they go in order to make it a little bit easier for you to go through there and
Pick
up?
No, it's not going
to
add
any. To one area, you're basically going through there and, you know, emptying possibly up to 20 containers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Picking up
one. Mm-hmm. So the ratios that we can work with, and we can provide a range of how many containers per resident or building, and then they can pick inside of that. It would still go back to code enforcement if it's unsightly. We would then also provide additional service and charge them. If they didn't want to pay the bill, then we wouldn't do the service, right, except for the base. So there's a lot of flexibility there for us to work with the customer to test drive what we're going to do for them, and then code enforcement to ask them to maintain it and provide this level of service that keeps it out of a nuisance situation. But once we go into a facility, we're going to service all those different enclosures. The more service we provide, obviously, the more cost there's going to be, but then there's less labor for them to provide on site. In the form of maintenance crew or, you know, those sorts of things. So, and I just want to reiterate that. We have all the different services that they would need, but they have to choose to hire us to do it, right? There's also maintenance folks that could do some of that for them. But, if they're not willing to engage in those services, they're going to have a mess, right? So, I hope that answers the question. And yeah, they could go hog wild and have a lot of enclosures, or they could do the bare minimum inside the range. It's still going to be better than not having any sort of standard at all, for sure. Yeah, having a standard would be helpful.
Well, I was just wondering, you have that huge complex. You have one enclosure with a compactor. Was that strictly a budget consideration on their part?
I imagine it was.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the closures don't have to be fancy. We're not into that. It's up to whatever you decide. There's code that actually speaks to that specifically, but that's not for us to decide. We do know, though, if you don't provide adequate service, folks will make a mess.
Mm-hmm. Are the size of the containers standardized, like, or do they keep changing? Mm-hmm.
They are standardized, and they're not going to change.
Like a four-yarder will be a four-yarder.
Yeah, so we don't go that size, though, for our trucks. And I can't say never. We could look at that, but obviously the bigger the better. But then, you know, space is valuable.
How big are the round ones with the
wheels?
They're
52 inches.
Okay.
So they're under 5 feet, right?
So is there, and there's no compost, or yes, on multifamily?
Not currently.
Yeah.
So the city council approved compost services for residential only, not for commercial. Now the city could change their mind and want to add that, and that would be additional vessels.
Well, that's like a trick, right? Is like a minimum of three for, it would seem a minimum of three for that size. That's the commercial size. So, cause otherwise then you build all these things and you have a trash and a recycling and then compost goes and, you know, you get a leash and
that probably will be a goal for the state, is to eventually have compost
for multifamily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to get an actual size. I'm thinking selfishly right now, but just having like an actual, you know, these are, you know, accommodate three of these somewhere on the site. And this is, I'm sure your, whoever supplies the containers has like a CAD file, right? Mm-hmm. Or a PDF here are the dimensions, make sure to accommodate this.
Mm-hmm. And that's in the table from the document we submitted. They have a lot of size and, you know, yeah, I don't know. How much we could go into detail on
it's
the
how
side.
Many do you dictate, right? I mean, I think if you get into anything, you have to have some level of specificity where you're actually saying you have to provide this number, right?
Yeah, and there's a number of ways you can tackle it, Dustin. You can say the enclosures have to be X distance from an entrance to a building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're worried about people having to walk too far.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, based on site design, may drive the number of you know, enclosures you have.
Mm-hmm.
And some minimum baseline standards for sizing the enclosures.
Because, like, the enclosures at Surfview are huge. There's way more space than they need. But
it's just a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have enough service. They just have one location. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there may be circumstances where you could get by with one large enclosure if your site design is such that it's proximate to all your buildings.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we have to put some thought to that.
Yeah.
But we can bring some options forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
One other thing.
Good questions. Wow.
Yeah.
I would just like to compliment Thompson's.
Oh.
I walk down to the transfer station like 3 to 4 days a week with the dogs. And considering the amount of wind we have around here, it's rare that I ever find any trash from any of the trucks.
Wow, okay.
On Avery Street. And then, frankly, the drivers and the people there, you know,
I thought I recognized you.
They're very friendly.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Compliments are hard to come by. And,
I know, but I mean.
And I would say
trash usually doesn't come out of his trucks. It comes out of the contractor's trucks.
And, Bill, I would encourage you. I have a cover on mine, so. If you see something you don't like, let us know. We'll try, right?
Yeah, I walk right by the office every day.
But that's very, very nice.
I like your online, too. Oh, Let us know that. Hey, tomorrow's trash day.
Okay, good.
Reminders are good.
Yeah.
You're right, it is the concrete.
Thank you all so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
No worries.
We'll wait to hear from you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll reach out.
Okay, great.
Don't call us, we'll call you.
Yeah, I just don't want there to be confusion.
No, that's fair.
Thanks.
Well, we seemed receptive to putting up some standards for them.
Yeah.
Okay, we're on to 2B, overview of updated zoning maps.
Okay, we'll see how, if go off stop share here. Just one moment to tee it up.
Oh.
Come on. One second, it's loading up. Presto. Okay, so we have a web map. I was going to run through this web map with you briefly. The plan is to make this available on the city's website in the coming weeks. We currently don't have a GIS technician, and so the individual we had who actually did the work on this with us left to another position, and so we're going to be recruiting to fill that. In the meantime, we're about to execute a contract with a third-party vendor to just provide assistance on a contract basis. But the plan is to embed this in our city website, probably in the community development webpage, maybe with a link on the main page. And my objective in running through this with you really is to just kind of show you what it looks like and see if you think there's any significant missing pieces. So it'll zoom in. You can pan through as you see what I'm doing right here. And if, you know, whatever you do have a legend, right now we're only displaying two things, city limits and the urban growth boundary. But there are a number of other layers we would make available, and that's what I'm showing you here. This operates very similar to the one that we put up there for the transportation system plan that many of you had a chance to play around with, and very similar to the one that we put out there for camping, which shows, you know, where areas are not permissible for camping. But, you know, for land use planning, we have a number of things we can show, you know, everything from if you want to bring the zoning up, we can bring the zoning up and have that labeled. We can show the comprehensive plan map designations. One of the common things that we get requests for, estuarian, which is your in-water mapped areas. And if you ID these, you can take a look at the, you know, what, if you're trying to figure out, okay, I'm going to do some in-water work. Okay, I'm in estuary management unit 5. At least it gives, in some cases, at least it gives you some information you can ask planning staff about. What folks commonly want is just to know what the zoning is. And will often get attached as a map, either as part of a real estate transaction in the mortgage closing documents, or if it's part of, you know, it's certainly embedded typically as part of the appraisal that's done as part of that process. And they want to be able to just zoom in, oh, okay, it's R3, R4, R1. Okay. We do have hazards layers here, which I think will work a little bit better than the hazards maps that we have right now, which are at such a scale that it's difficult sometimes to see exactly where the boundaries are. Here you can actually display them in some detail if you want to look at say, you know, this here would be your geologic hazards, either the stuff along the bluff here or, you know, some of these areas here along the bayfront or your more generalized geologic hazard areas. You also have the floodplain information that's in here, which is often something somebody wants to look at, particularly if lending's involved, where you can show the 100-year floodplain boundaries. So we can get this teed up and get it displaying everything it's supposed to display. But really, I was just wanting to bounce off you guys, make sure you were comfortable with the utility of something like this.
Yeah. Derek, can you... send us all a link. It's not in the packet, right?
Right. Oh. It's not available to the public yet. We don't have it available, so I don't have a link I can share with you, Bob. If there are certain things you would like to see in something like this.
So the tsunami overlay would be nice to add.
Okay.
And a legend for what the colors mean. I don't know if it's being hidden someplace on the screen.
Yeah, let me try the, so for example, if it pops up, here's where you'd get it on the legend.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right.
Part of it's just getting familiar with the web map interface and what it shows.
It's kind of like Dogami's website, right?
Yeah, it's similar.
Yeah. Does it have all the same, that's the same map as Dogami, right? Is that what that layer is?
For hazards?
Yeah.
It's a subset of that. We didn't adopt all of the Dogami hazard areas, so they're low and moderate, for example, bluff hazards, not regulatory for the city, so we don't display it. Okay. We have that information, we just don't display it.
Got it.
So a tsunami overlay, clear legend. And what I was going to see is if we can set it up such that somebody can do a printable map, you know, just a basic printable map with the appropriate, we don't warrant anything that's displayed on this map. kind of language. We don't want people to take everything on these as gospel. We also don't want, I mean, we want it to be a convenience for folks, but we also want to make sure people are talking to us when it's appropriate so that they don't read into some of this more than they should. Now, there's some information we will not display publicly, you know, so location of utilities, for example, we won't put that out publicly. In part, we get concerned about people taking that for gospel, and it's not down to survey level. And it's constantly being maintained and updated such that it probably doesn't make sense to make it available that way.
Well, is that, yeah, because otherwise, if you provide too much information, they'll be like, well, I didn't need a geo report. I looked on this and it said no, right? Is that, that's the
right
concern?
You know, I think what we want them to do is say, oh, this is potentially in a geo area. Do we need to do something about it?
No.
Talk to the city.
Can you scroll down to South Beach just for a second? And
sure.
Look at that mess with the city limits down there.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's favorite. Oops.
Yeah.
Heading back up here. This area?
Yeah, all of that. All the crisscrossing dotted lines are really mind-boggling. But, yeah, we're going to fix that pretty quick.
We are working on it.
Maybe you should have a layer that also puts the color inside the city and outside the city, because sometimes trying to read these things as to what's in and what's out.
Yeah, the zoning layer helps. This shows it to you. But basic...
Yeah, base, I mean, that would do it there if that's showing the inside the city stuff, so you can at least tell what's in the city, what isn't in the city.
Yeah, the zoning will do that. That's okay. What you're looking at here.
All right, yeah.
Showing your pockets.
Which ones? That shows you what's out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And can you turn on a parcel layer or not?
Yes. That would be right here.
Okay,
that's great. Or it just went visible, sorry, right when I came in. And you got your addressing.
Perfect.
It'll only display if you're pretty tight in, so that otherwise, if you're way zoomed out, it doesn't help a whole lot anyway. So you've got that. We threw in the contours at 5 foot, not at 1 foot. Dustin, we do have them at 1 foot. they would hammer somebody's machine, but
yeah.
We thought 5 foot. 5 foot's probably the most useful. We have 20 too, but that doesn't necessarily show a whole lot.
Well, I for one think this is fabulous, and we'll probably end up spending a lot of time with it. So, great, thanks.
Okay, I'll let you guys know when it's available.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, on to unfinished business, 3A.
Get off that.
Newport Municipal Code Chapter 14, camper related land use amendments.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and bring those up and maybe just pan through those and we can talk about them. Go back to this. One more screen share. So what I'm going to bring up are the draft amendments in Chapter 14. They're not too many. Hopefully I'm still in Zoom. Yep. Up you. Okay. So per our prior conversation, we had... You know, the camping ordinance that was adopted in Chapter 9.5 addresses public rights away in public spaces and is not a land use ordinance per se. This focuses more on the privately owned property side of things. And we had previously talked about areas, you know, where you wanted to see some code language. And then there were a few spots here. For example, we need to be consistent in terms of what we mean by camp or camping. And so those three definitions are exactly the same as they are in Chapter 9.5. But we can't assume necessarily that terms would be interpreted the same way unless we include it in the definition section of Chapter 14. So it's unfortunate we have to double it up, but I think it makes it clearer that way. In zone districts, this language is still here. This gets at, and that's, I said, no changes to the highlighted language. This is the limited allowance for camping on commercial or industrial properties for a fee. So we're talking about in circumstances where a fee is charged to secure to camp there, or, you know, secure the trade or patronage of a person. So there's some exchange in value there. If it's free in charge, you've got that covered under Chapter 9.5.
So the Elks would be covered, all those RVs that are, people come into town and hook up there.
Yeah, they actually have yes, that's been they're authorized. That's a place that's authorized for camping. Okay. It's a limited recreational vehicle park authorization there. From many, many years ago, Bob.
Eric?
Yes.
Is there a permit process when somebody as a residential brings in an RV for camping and doesn't charge a fee?
If they bring an RV in for, what are you talking about?
Okay, like, residential in the driveway and the RV.
Yeah, we'll hit that. We've got, right now it's not permissible to reside in an RV on a residential lot. But we did add some language at the request of the commission for our prior work session that gets at that. So I'll touch on that in just one moment.
Will they be required to submit a permit or require a permit?
Well, ideally we're trying to avoid permits here and just setting out parameters under which it's permissible. I think it works better that way because they're not intuitively going to know they need a permit for something like that. And as long as you can set the parameters such that it's reasonable, then, you know, we work with that. And if they're outside of those parameters, then it's a code enforcement issue.
Derek, in a situation like that, if we allow it in the code, that does not supersede CC&Rs, does it?
Correct. No, that's a fair question, Bob. CC&Rs, but, you know, if we allow it in the code, that's great. If it's CC&Rs in that particular development, say, you can't do it, those are privately enforceable. We won't enforce them, but those in the development can enforce them.
Derek, how much time does the code enforcement officers spend monitoring the RVs that are parked in the streets, and then they paint them and they move around? And do you have any idea?
Our code enforcement staff spend a fair amount of time, working with the homeless individuals, and in some cases not homeless, just people who couldn't find a camping spot and are parking on the side of the road. They spend a fair amount of time with that. I can't tell you exactly how much. But, you know, what has helped is the camping ordinance has helped, because now they have some clear guidance as to how to operate. Our police proper will typically only address that if it's a hazard issue. You know, it's mostly our code enforcement staff. You know, and we are going to be going through a brief period here where we're a little short there. We only have one full-time because our other full-time took a position elsewhere. But they're almost through the recruitment process with a replacement staff person. So that shouldn't be too, too bad. We have 2.5 code enforcement folks. So they'll have to go and they have another half-time for weekends, mostly short-term rental stuff, that they'll have to re-recruit, because they're going to be transitioning the person they thought they were going to be hiring into that position into the full-time position.
Significant use of resources.
Correct. So for manufactured dwellings, we've got some language in here. Number 5 here, this gets at outside of a manufactured dwelling park. This gets the language we were just talking about for temporary living quarters, where it'd be, you know, on a lot, parcel, or tract developed with a dwelling unit, tract would mean they have potentially more than one lot, but it's developed with a dwelling unit. So it's a double lot with a house on it, or the house is on one lot, but they own the vacant lot next to it. But it's that's the tract that the dwelling's on. So that's why those terms are used there. That the accommodations are made free of charge, that occupancy is limited to a single vehicle that's parked in a gravel or paved driveway, not in the lawn next to the fence next to the neighbor, but in the driveway. Sanitary facilities in the dwelling are made available to the vehicle occupants. They're not hooking into the sewer system for the dwelling. If they need to empty the tanks in the RV, they'd go to a public disposal site to do that. So that's where the vehicle's self-contained for sanitary sewer, and then they're storing all their stuff in their vehicle. So it's not, they're parked here and you've got a whole bunch of other stuff piled up on the front yard. And then there's some language in here, and you know, we can, again, this is just trying to start the discussion with actual code language. Vehicles used as a place of habitation for no more than 12 months. I mean, so it's not there permanently. So somebody can't permanently be in an RV, you know, for the next 5, 7, 8 years in the driveway.
So the 12 months is up for negotiation with us?
Absolutely. All of this is. Okay. I was just trying to frame it, okay, you know, in a manner that makes sense in terms of how, you know, based okay on our prior discussion, you had some interest in seeing some code language. This is an initial shot at that. Temporary uses, you know, we already had some language in here. I think it's just trying to clean up some of the provisions here and consolidated. The temporary living quarters language really drives at, you know, while you're building or repairing a home. And state law now requires that we make that accommodation. And this is a little bit of reformatting in here, as largely reformatting. And then under accessory uses, we'd talked about getting some language in here that makes it clear. Hey, you can have a tent in the back. You can have, you know, a relative, a friend, you know, whatever, you can have a tent in the backyard, and that's customarily accessory to a residential use. It's common. It's common here. It's common in a lot of places. But I think there was some interest in saying, well, okay, one tent, two tents, three tents, four tents. You know, at what point is it no longer, you know, ancillary to the principal use of the property? This makes it expressly clear, hey, one tent, you get one tent. We're not trying to peg the size of the tent, but you get a tent.
Yeah, I have a question on the tent issue. So I was surprised when I looked at all the other code, nobody defined tent. And I see we're not defining tent.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a reason for that? Is there, I was just surprised that no city tried to define the word tent, which coming from our neighbor to the South California, we had a lot of issues relative to what people thought was a tent. And I've seen, you know, homes built in a shoddier fashion than some tents that popped up in some places. So, is there a reason why no one's trying to describe it? Hasn't been an issue? Or what if a, you know, 30 by 30 tent pops up in somebody's backyard? It would appear to me that that's in conformance if their yard's big enough.
Well, if you put up a hawker tent, the same one that Seafood and Wine uses, that's a tent.
That's a tent.
Yeah.
You want me to put a size parameter in there?
Well,
is that kind of where you're going at
it? I was actually
going
to bring up, there used to be a size parameter on accessory uses for gazebos, sheds.
We do have those in there under the balance. I could make sure it's connected.
Well,
so
yeah,
that these tents can't be any larger than say your accessory shed can be.
Yeah.
Is that what you're driving at?
Are you sure it's in there? Because I went looking for it, and under accessory uses, there was no size things. And I was like trying to find.
No, they're in there.
Because I remember there was one, but
they're
just looking in the wrong spot.
I'll just jot that down to tie it to. Mm-hmm. And we can look at defining that.
Well, I drew attention to the size the last time we discussed this, because you could end up with a small carnival in your neighbor's backyard.
Yeah. Right.
Circus.
Right.
And that's not what I think this is all about. Well, they invite me over.
And also, you know, the other one is a yurt.
A yurt? Oh, God.
Okay. Is it a tent or is it a building?
Yeah.
Or is it a, is it a hybrid? It's got a wood floor. Okay, that's the only difference between it and a tent.
Throw a couple pallets down and you got a floor.
We probably need that.
Let me take a look at yurt on that, because it may be shifting it into the accessory dwelling unit provisions at that point.
Okay.
You know, at what point is it a dwelling unit versus just a temporary occupancy out there? No, we were not, you know, a tent does not have, it's not a dwelling unit, it doesn't have cooking facilities, but a yurt with cooking facilities is usually your defining element for a dwelling unit. A yurt very well could, in which case it's an accessory dwelling unit. And it falls under those provisions.
Okay. Well, that would kind of make sense, but I think we need to nail it down just because.
Okay.
And I think we do need something for size because, you know, Army squad tents.
I'm going to push it.
No.
I'm assuming that by putting it under accessory use, there's already setback guidelines that apply, and that's why we didn't have to regurgitate any setback requirements.
Yeah.
Setback from property lines, things like that. Yeah. Fair enough.
And that was it. That was the last piece there. Okay. I mean, that's a pretty targeted set that I can work in that language. That won't be a problem.
Can we go back to the 12 months issue?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we have 12 months, 12 24 the, months in
right,
there.
Right, we got a 12 and
so
a 24.
So the question is 12 when, months.
Whatever the magic number ends up being, is the intent consecutive? And if it is, we should
say that. The 24 is actually set by statute for replacement dwelling stuff. That's set.
Yeah.
So we have to, and it's considered consecutive. Okay. But we could. I set the language for tents less than that at 12, obviously. So, and it's really whatever you think is reasonable. Most, you know, it's not typical that you would have that for more than 12 months. You know, it's typical. It's in the warm weather season and it's gone.
I would say 6 months. Six, otherwise, it starts becoming.
Yeah,
more six. Yes, more, you have more comfortable with six.
Permanent. I'm thinking six would be better than a full year. You know.
Okay.
Because I'll have relatives calling me up. Can I park in your driveway for?
Yeah.
Right. No, that's fair. Well, that's fine.
You can't charge for it,
huh?
Yeah, you can't charge for it either.
Anything else on that, or I've jotted these down, so I guess your regular meeting, if you want to initiate the legislative process so I can notice DLCD, that'd be great, and I'll make these changes prior to the first hearing.
We need to do that in the meeting, though, right?
That's in the regular meeting, correct.
Okay. All right, we'll do.
That's all I had for the work session.
All right. Now we're on to the regular session meeting agenda.
I'm going to stop share. Do I need a quote?
Good night, gentlemen.